Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of Insurance Uncovered. As you already know, this podcast is produced by the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies, and it's your source for insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the property casualty insurance industry. I'm your host, Kathy Imus, and today we're uncovering the SMART Act, how the NAMIC-supported legislation protects consumer choice in auto repairs, plus an update to the Mutual Factor Report. The first ever mid-year report reflects on the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead for the mutual industry. But first in Washington, D.C., one of NAMIC's federal priorities is in the spotlight as a House Judiciary Subcommittee recently held a hearing on right to repair issues and the Save Money on Auto Repair Transportation, or SMART Act. The measure would ensure competition in the marketplace for aftermarket cosmetic repair auto parts by reducing the window of exclusivity on some design patents from 14 years down to 2.5 years. The hearing saw bipartisan agreement from lawmakers that unfair repair restrictions across industries are actually hurting consumers and that Congress needs to take action in some form.
The right to repair is about empowering consumers, promoting competition, and extending innovation. It can be a key driver of growth and prosperity. Right to repair fosters consumer choice and freedom to enable consumers to protect their investment and extend the lifespan of their product and devices. It is a fundamental consumer principle.
Rather than seeking a fix to the safety and cyber concerns inherent in technological innovation, OEMs have sought to steer customers back toward dealerships and away from the car mechanic that they trust.
NAMIC has long supported competition in the marketplace as a means for keeping prices lower without reducing the safety of vehicles. The federal advocacy team is urging NAMIC members to contact their representatives to ask them to support the SMART Act and other right to repair legislation. Well, the National Council of Insurance Legislators wrapped up its summer meeting in Minneapolis last week. On the property casualty insurance front, model laws were introduced relating to the premium credits for mitigation activities, standards of conduct for public adjusters, and catalytic converter theft. None were formally adopted at this meeting. Also of note, NCOIL continued its three-part discussion series on ESG issues with a panel focused on the social component. NCOIL Vice President Tom Oliverson of Texas began the session with an acknowledgement that while many of the issues NCOIL discusses are nonpartisan, this one is decidedly not. He also suggested that no model policy would be forthcoming on such a divisive issue. You can read a full recap of NCOIL's summer meeting at NAMIC.org. Just check out the tab under Special Reports. Here's an interesting fact. The 1980s saw a single billion-dollar weather event every 4 months on average. But in this last decade, the U.S. has seen one of those same events every 3 weeks. NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information updated its report for U.S. billion-dollar weather and climate disasters and found that through July 11th of this year, there have already been 12 confirmed weather-climate disaster events with losses exceeding $1 billion each affecting the United States. These events included one flooding event, 10 severe storm events, and one winter storm event. Overall, these events resulted in the deaths of 100 people and had significant economic impacts on the areas where they occurred. For the first time since its inception back in 2018, NAMIC and Aon have published a mid-year update to the annual Mutual Factor Report. In collaborating on this year's upcoming report, NAMIC and Aon agreed it was important to check in with the mutuals at the midway point to reflect on events at the close of 2022, as well as the challenges affecting our industry through the first half of this year and on the opportunities that lie ahead. On today's Unscripted, NAMIC CEO Neil Aldridge sits down with Aon's Patrick Abbey to talk about the mid-year findings.
Well, joining me today, we have a repeat guest, although he's probably in a little different time frame. Patrick Abbey from Aon is joining me. And for the listeners' benefit, we're actually here at our management conference in Quebec City, Canada this year. We're in late June, and we are going to talk today about what is something new, a mid-year report for the Aon and NAMIC joint project that is the Mutual Factor that studies the performance of the mutual insurance industry and how it compares to others in the industry. And with everything going on in the industry, we thought it was a good idea to do a little mid-year update this year. And so that's what we're going to focus on today. So Patrick, thanks for joining me as always.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it.
So let's just tell a little bit about the listeners about what we're up to here. What are we doing here? We got a mid-year update. Give us a little thought on why we thought it was a good idea to kind of update things now.
Sure. So as the listeners know, September is the normal time frame when we release the broad mutual factor report. And as we turn the clock or turn the calendar to 2023, we sat down as a team and recognized that a lot had happened since last year's annual convention, and there was plenty to talk about. And it felt like releasing something here in the mid-year would give us an opportunity to look back on what happened kind of post-annual convention at the end of last year, as well as what's taken place for the industry in quarter one, 2023, because as many of the listeners know, it's been a pretty active start to the year as well.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that active start. Certainly, the end of 2022 didn't shape up very well for the industry, and it's carried over into this year. So why don't we just talk a little bit about that now? Let's talk about some of the cat losses. We had a very large hurricane since we last talked, and then other influences that sort of affected the performance. What is the report showing us here?
Sure. So if you look back to the end of September 2022 into October, Hurricane Ian made landfall. That happened at a time following a number of losses and large loss activity for the industry. It came at a time of heightened sensitivity for the reinsurance industry, and really was a key element in driving some both reinsurance buying behavior as well as reinsurance underwriting behavior going into 1/1/2023. So it was a very large event, and if you look back and you benchmark that event against some of the largest hurricanes in the U.S., it's up there on the list.
Mm-hmm. 50-ish billion dollars, I think, in insured losses?
Yes, yeah. So remarkable event. Now, interestingly enough, it's an event that when you talk to the reinsurance community, this is an event that they're there to cover, right? This is why the reinsurance industry exists. What's been the challenge is that event happening on the heels of significant severe convective storm activity, wildfire activity. If we look back over the past 4 or 5 years, winter storm activity, mm-hmm. So it's just been very, very active. It's not that the industry can't handle a $50 billion hurricane. It's just the $50 billion hurricane in conjunction with everything else that's been happening, I think made that event feel like it had a larger impact on the business than maybe most people would have expected.
Yeah, we'll talk about the reinsurance renewal process. We talked about it yesterday in a panel discussion here at Management Conference, and we'll talk about it a little bit as well here as we go through things here. So let's kind of go forward here. We're, into the second quarter of 23. Quarter one was not particularly great either. In terms of losses, and you throw in the inflationary pressures, it looks like inflation maybe is coming down, but there's still a lag in there in terms of overall costs. So what are we seeing for the first quarter, at least through 2023?
Sure. So first quarter of 2023 started out with many carriers experiencing the after effects of the winter storm that impacted the U.S. right around the Christmas time. So if you think back to the timing of that, in conjunction with reinsurance renewals at 1/1, it was a little late in terms of how it impacted reinsurers, but insurance companies were recognizing losses from that event into the first quarter. And then, of course, as the first 3 months progressed in 2023, SCS activity, severe convective storm activity, mm-hmm. picked up. And I think the general theme of a lot of this is it's very regional specific. So you've got some carriers that have had a fairly strong start to the year, and you've got other carriers that have been impacted materially by that activity. And of course, as a lot of people know, as reinsurance retentions in general have gone up following 1/1, we've got heightened activity at a time when many carriers are retaining more of that risk than they have historically. So what does all that mean? Obviously, we don't have the crystal ball for the next 5 or 6 months, but it has the potential to ultimately lead to a wider outcome in terms of results for the industry. Higher retentions, more regional activity. You're going to see some people that are performing very well, some carriers that are performing very well, and potentially others that are going to be more drastically impacted by the activity.
Right. So let's talk a little, just a minute before we get into that reinsurance side of things. What are we seeing in the report itself as far as where do we think companies are faring? I know you said it's still kind of a mixed bag, but is the trend any different necessarily overall?
Sure. So I think what you'll see, right, in the mutual factor report has always done a really nice job of allowing mutual companies to benchmark themselves against one another, as well as benchmark their performance against stock companies. Mm-hmm. And as you know better than I do, Neil, part of the magic of mutual companies, right, is ability to take the longer-term view and navigate potentially more consistently volatile markets like we're experiencing right now.
Right.
So what you see in the report, right, is to close out the year, in general, mutual companies running higher loss ratios, a higher combined ratio than their stock company competitors. Some of that, I think, is by nature of this kind of long-term approach mm-hmm. that many of the carriers are looking to take. But I think also some of it is being driven by the regionality of some of this CAT activity, right? I like to say footprint matters. And if you're in the wrong spot at the wrong time when some of this regional activity is happening, that's going to impact your results as well.
Yeah, we have, if you look at the map of where the mutual insurers are, they're in the Northeast and the Midwest primarily. They write all over the country, but they're based in heavily in those states. And look at market share by state. You see a lot of Midwestern states, of course, and that's where a lot of the storm activity has been, right where they are, right where they write. But you're right, that's the benefit of these companies is they're durable. They've been around hundreds of years in some cases, and they have been through challenging times before, but there does seem to be sort of a set of circumstances here that's particularly unique when you throw in increased storm losses, increased inflation, supply chain problems, costs more to put broken things back together again. And then we had the reinsurance capacity issues from the beginning of the year. Usually one of those things might occur in a year. We happen to have all of those things happen at the same time here, which makes this particularly challenging. So maybe talk a little bit about, maybe that's a good segue for us to get to the, just a minute on some of the January 1 renewal, what we experience now going forward here on the reinsurance side.
Sure. So challenging January 1 reinsurance renewal broadly for the industry. A lot happening around Hurricane Ian, around inflation, restriction in reinsurer appetite and capacity led to a very challenging 1-1. Now, the bright side is since then, by and large, the market has been very orderly. Important to note that orderly doesn't necessarily mean large rate decreases, but far more predictable and I think easier for reinsurance buyers to navigate. I think reinsurer appetites are much more clearly defined, and reinsurers are acting, they're much more nimble, underwriters are empowered, and by and large, the market's been pretty orderly. Obviously, we don't have the crystal ball on what's going to happen with the weather the rest of the year, mm-hmm. But I think the experience of reinsurance buyers here over the past 3 or 4 months has been for smoother renewals than happened in the October, November, and December timeframe.
That's good. Orderly might be a good, very precise word. But certainly maybe it's a better word than we had before, which seemed to border on chaos to some degree. So that may be good. I know our member company, the primary writers, would like to see it be less costly, of course, but orderly they can probably deal with. So that's good.
Sure. And, we are seeing, early signs of bits of capacity and capital entering the market. You're seeing some acquisition activity in the reinsurance space. You're seeing capital raises happening. These are all good things for the industry, right? Because it's demonstrating informed capital leaning into risk and leaning into the business. I think the industry, by and large, is waiting for new company formation to happen. That's something that's happened in the past, mm-hmm. following lots of CAT activity. It hasn't happened yet, but we think it will eventually, right? So the supply-demand dynamic feels much more balanced now in the business than it felt at the end of 2022. And I think that's a good sign just in terms of hope for that orderly renewal process to continue here the rest of the year.
Yeah, we all, I think, can hope for that. That's going to be not a repeat of what we saw before. That in and of itself will be good. So let's wrap things up here. Let's look at what we expect from the full mutual factor report that we release at convention in September. I know some of it will be similar as in years past. That's sort of the point of the report, is to have a time frame where people can compare themselves over a period of time. But let's talk about the report itself and what we can expect in September.
Absolutely. So certainly more of the same around the opportunity to do some benchmarking. As I alluded earlier in the conversation, the way we think about this idea of kind of footprint mattering, and then the idea that the mutual company segment as a whole has got a broad footprint, but is more heavily concentrated in certain areas. And so some of the differing results you're going to see are based on that footprint, and we're going to try to highlight that a little bit more to allow for some greater amount of peer comparison and benchmarking than we have in the past. And then I know, you know, the plan for the survey is an exciting one as well, right? I think here at the management conference, there's a lot of talk around talent and the topic of talent and the workforce. And, you know, NAMIC has always done such a wonderful job of highlighting key items for the industry to be thinking about, and this year is going to be no different. So we're really excited about that and for the opportunity for NAMIC members to share their insights with one another, right? That's really the idea, is to learn from one another, another cornerstone of this great group of people.
Yeah, so for listeners, many of you would have received an email from me sometime here in the last few days. Again, it's late June here today. June the 27th, actually, but you can hopefully find that in your email box, where there's a survey where we're asking member companies to provide us sort of an update on where they are with their work environments, how is that going, and several other questions, and we're going to add those responses into the Mutual Factor Report. We typically do some sort of survey component to the report, whether it be surveying consumers on their views of mutuality or whatever the case might be. Last year was reinsurers. That we interviewed in the report, and this year we're going to go back and survey member companies on some of the topics, looking at workplace environments and working from home, the hybrid environment. Kind of, we're a little more mature in that space now. What are we seeing? What are we feeling about how that's going for the industry? So, encourage all of you out there to fill out that survey, because it will give us a more robust look in terms of what's going on within the membership and make the report all the better. Well, listen, Patrick, thank you for joining us. Thanks to Aon, as always, for the partnership on this project. I think we're year five-ish, I think, maybe even six now.
That's right.
For this project, and it's been a valuable addition to the lineup here, and it's something that we really value the relationship with Aon on. So we thank you again for your time, and thanks for working with us on the project.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's our pleasure.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Insurance Uncovered. We hope you'll be back again with us on August 9th when we bring you more insurance news and perspective from thought leaders in the industry. Until next time, I'm Kathy Imus. Have a terrific day.